pretty startling for the majority of the public to know that within about two blocks from the White House itself, there are homeless people sleeping in parks.
This year, we'll be live from the streets of Washington, D.C. That's the Homelessness Marathon broadcast, coming to you soon and heard right here on this radio station.
This station is KBOO Portland. Hear the Homelessness Marathon live beginning at 5 p.m. Wednesday, February 17th, and continuing until 6 a.m. Thursday morning.
On February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., Grassroot News will honor the memory, legacy, and life of Malcolm X. Join us for the music, the memory, and the deconstruction of Malcolm's political career, his split from the Nation of Islam, and the course of actions that led to his assassination 51 years ago on February 21st, 1965. As Ozzie Davis eulogized,
"Prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so."
Again, on February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., join us as we honor the memory, life, and legacy of Malcolm X.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Hello, everyone. It's now 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Up now is Labor Radio. Up at 6:30 will be Prison Pipeline. Labor Radio, I'm your host, Nick Bubb. With me here is...
Michael Cathcart.
How are you tonight, Michael?
Doing great. How are you doing, Nick?
Fantastic. And that's because we have an exciting show tonight. A little bit later, we're going to talk about Seattle passing law allowing Uber, Lyft, and other drivers in the share economy to unionize. They're going to be able to collectively bargain without having employee status.
It's the first of its kind.
It is. We'll talk about... Hillary versus Bernie a little bit later, but first we have something really interesting to talk about, something that affects a lot of people and probably even some people that are listening right now. We're going to talk about wage theft.
Yep.
This is a big problem, and I'm maybe not even qualified to deliver the impact of it. So tonight we have a special guest. We have John Gear on the line. Are you there, John?
I am here.
How are you tonight?
I'm terrific. Thank you.
And so why don't you tell us what you do?
I'm a consumer attorney primarily, but I also have some wage theft cases, and I'm a contributor and supporter of the Northwest Workers Justice Project, NWJP.org, which is a Portland nonprofit that concentrates on the rights of workers and has a big wage theft project.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I imagine there's some people listening right now maybe that they're not sure exactly what is wage theft.
Wage theft is when the employer fails to follow the law requiring that you be paid for all the time you work, and it's epidemic in certain sectors of the economy, particularly restaurant, food service, agriculture, and construction, anywhere where there's lots of casual labor,
mm-hmm.
or non-union workplaces and small employers with large numbers of employees, you're likely to see a lot of wage theft.
Sounds like this is people, you say fast food, restaurants, agriculture, sounds like people that already are being paid perhaps lower wages, and then on top of it, they'll have even more not paid by their employer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the infuriating thing is that people with means, people in the high paid salaried jobs, they'll fight back, and they can usually access the resources to fight back, and nobody steals their wages. the people steal wages from the people least able to afford it because they're the best victims in terms of who's least likely to stand up is somebody who's desperate, works in a non-union workplace, and really is just one check away from being homeless. They have a hard time standing up for themselves.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I've got my copy of Labor Notes right here, and it says that 50% of people in America have less than $1,000 to their name in their bank account.
I know that game.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, and then you got the boss taking money away from you, too.
Yep.
Now, this just isn't the wages, but I think people also get shorted on their overtime, right? Law requires them to pay time and a half after 40 hours, if I'm not mistaken.
For the basic case of an hourly wage worker, a time clock worker, that's true. There are some exceptions, but in the main, time and a half is the rule for a 40-hour week. And really everybody who punches a clock is vulnerable to wage theft because what happens is that people think, oh, well, I punch a clock or I sign in on the computer and I sign out, and so there's no way that my boss would steal money from me, but they will.
Mm-hmm.
And it really it's inattention that allows this to go on, and people who just place their trust in the goodwill of the employer don't realize that if the employer can steal a little bit from a lot of people a lot of times, it's really real money for the employer.
Mm-hmm.
And so people need to understand that you're entitled to a wage statement. Every time you're paid, you are entitled to a written statement that shows your hours worked, the rate of pay, and all the deductions from your wages. And you really ought to take a couple minutes to look at that statement and make sure it adds up, because that's the first thing that would be your warning sign. If the number on that pay stub doesn't equal the number on the check,
mm-hmm.
you figure out, well, why is that? What happened here?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I've definitely noticed at my job as well. But so if a worker finds themselves in that position, what would be the next step? What would be the thing they would do to try and mitigate that?
Well, the most important thing, and I know this will sound funny coming from a lawyer, but is before you call the lawyer, first thing is make sure you have your facts right. Sit down and look at, well, you know, make sure, do the math twice. Is this a wage theft problem? And then go to the employer and go to your boss and say, I'm sorry, I can't understand my pay stub. It seems like this doesn't add up.
Mm-hmm.
And then after talking about it, the employer may well fix it. It may well be a mistake, an honest mistake. Or if it's not, they may fix it anyway because you're on to them and you said something. But you want to keep notes about, I talked to this person on this day, I showed him my pay stub or I showed her my pay stub, and I asked how come I didn't get the overtime. I did 3 hours of overtime the previous Saturday, and it looks like I didn't get any overtime wage that week. You know, and mm-hmm. write down what you asked and what they told you. And then if you don't get the pay you're entitled to, then you have to think about your choices, which are to go to the Bureau of Labor and Industries or go to an attorney mm-hmm. and make a wage claim against the employer.
Right.
So I know for me, I'm in a union, and as a part of our contract, if the employer shorts us any hours and we're not paid by the following Friday, not only do they have to pay us that money, but they have a penalty of 2 hours of pay for each and every day they're late paying us. And so I obviously I'm a fan of unions, but now that I'm used to this. But for the folks that aren't in unions, what kind of laws are there to protect them? And are there penalties? And are the laws really strong enough to protect workers as they are in Oregon?
You know, there are laws, and they're probably not strong enough. The law, it's very difficult to to make a claim for a small amount of money and find an attorney who can help you with that claim, because it's simply such, it's a big amount of money to the worker, but to the legal system it's such a small amount of money. You really need to try to work it out with the employer and let people know, hey, I haven't been paid. If you are not sure what to do in Portland, certainly I would call the Northwest Workers Justice Project and ask them to help you, because they are going to have an insight and a history mm-hmm. on the employer. The Northwest Workers Justice Project, NWJP.org, they have a legal desk. They have guides, and they really want to. This is a key issue for them. You can call them direct at 503-525-8454, and you know, they will help you navigate the system. There's a lot of fear about going. A lot of people get ripped off by their employer because they're afraid to stand up to the employer.
Right.
Yep.
But if your wages are stolen and you raise a fuss and you get canned because of that, then you have a second cause of action against the employer that's a much more serious one, which is, you know, essentially you are a whistleblower. You had your wage stolen, you reported it to management, you get fired for that. Now you really have a strong claim because they have fired you for standing up for your legal rights. And that, Oregon has fairly strong law on that.
That's great. Okay, so this happens to a person and they get fired, and so they go to speak to a lawyer. Everybody knows that's expensive.
That's the problem. People don't understand that employment law often costs you nothing out of your pocket or just a few hundred dollars for costs. Most people who represent employees will do it on contingency, because our goal is to make the employer pay. And we know that working people who have already been ripped off don't have any money.
Right,
right.
So it's not true, and you can get referrals from the Northwest Workers Justice Project. You can call the Oregon State Bar, or you can call it, you know, just Google employment law or employee law and Oregon, and you'll find attorneys. There's a Northwest Wage Law up in Portland. I'm down in Salem. There are attorneys all over the state who will only represent employees and who would love to help you if you have a strong case.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, like you said, they just really feel helpless and they don't know what to do or if there's anything they can do. And maybe some people look at it and they think, oh, you know, well, it was just, you know, it's only an hour. You know, and I still got 39 hours, and I need those hours to live. But, you know, is there a more serious consequence letting this continue long term?
Yep.
Well, there's a couple. One is that what you're doing is you're rewarding misconduct by the bad employer who's pocketing extra money, and you're also hurting other businesses who compete with your employer. And you're forcing wages down for everybody, because if the bad employer who is willing to steal from his workers wins that game, then other businesses have a harder time competing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bad consequence all the way around. The other thing is, the other form of wage theft is to misclassify employees, and that's where, you know, they hire you and you're an employee for all intents and purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But they either call you a manager, and you have no managerial authority, you're not really a manager at all, and they try to make it like you're an exempt employee and a manager when you're really just a wage slave like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is when they get you to cobble up this idea that you're an independent contractor when you're really just an employee. And then they're not paying workers' comp for you, and then they're not paying unemployment for you. And so when you lose that job and you go file for unemployment, that's when you realize, oh, my God, they've been calling me an independent contractor. They've been saying I've been self-employed all this time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another form of wage theft, because you're not getting the full package of benefits. They don't pay your Social Security tax. They don't pay the 7.5% for you.
Right.
They don't pay the workers' comp. They don't pay the unemployment. And that will hurt you down the road.
So
when
so,
you get hurt on the job and you go to workers' comp, they say, well, you're an independent. You're supposed to have your own coverage.
So as an employee in that situation, maybe prior to discovering it, you know, going to a lawyer, or going to pay your taxes, is there a way to know that, that they've classified you as an independent contractor, even though you were under the assumption that you were an hourly employee?
Yeah, if you get a 1099 at the end of the year instead of a W-2.
Right.
I mean, but, you know, a lot of people just, they assume that businesses will follow the law. And I know that sounds funny, but
yeah.
you just can't take that for granted. Sometimes
course.
That even... Even nice people, they seem nice, mm-hmm. but they'll say, oh, well, this is just the way we've always done it. They'll give you some lame excuse that tries to put your mind at ease, and they'll say, well, we just have always done 1099s, and it's never been questioned, so it must be okay. Well, no, it's not okay. If you're an employee, you're supposed to have unemployment protection and workers' comp protection, and that means the employer has to pay those taxes and declare you as an employee, not an independent contractor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so if people have concerns about that, can they also reach out to the NWJP.org?
Exactly. The Northwest Workers Justice Project, part of wage theft is misclassification, because what the businesses are trying to do is shove the fringes onto the employee and then not pay the workers' comp, not pay the unemployment, and it leaves workers in a worse situation. And it's always the ones who have been hurt or they get fired. That's when they realize, oh, there was a cost to this. Sometimes employees think, oh, this is good. I'll get more money if I'm an independent contractor, if I let the boss call me an independent contractor. But if you are doing that, and you're not really an independent contractor, you're putting yourself at risk,
mm-hmm.
and you're not getting any more money than you would have. You're just seeing more of it.
Right. Have you, in the last, maybe since roughly 2008, have you noticed an increase in this type of activity, you know, reclassifying employees? Is that sort of a new trend, or has that been happening for a long time?
It's a huge trend all over the country, and it has gone up since the recession. I can't speak. I just went into private practice in 2010, mm-hmm. but I can say from my reading of labor law and from I belong to the National Employment Lawyers Association, I know that misclassification is on the rise because it's very attractive. And there's a bunch of businesses that really struggled, and then they went bankrupt, and then the owners, well, I'm going to start my new business, and this time I'm not going to have any employees.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has been a huge rise in misclassification, and Oregon is trying to crack down on that.
Good.
And there's been a number of good court cases holding that, you know, I don't care what the employer calls you, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
Uh-huh.
And basically, if you meet the economic realities test that, you know, you work for the one guy and the one guy tells you what to do and you use the one guy's tools and you go where he tells you to go and you go when he tells you to go,
mm-hmm.
you're an employee, whatever he calls you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So one of the other misclassifications you talked about was people being titled as management and exempt. I know the previous, there was a minimum wage threshold as well, and I think it used to be something like 23,000, really low like that. And Obama, if I remember, was talking about raising that up. Do you know if that ever happened?
Obama has proposed the rules, but the rules have not yet gone into effect, and it basically would double over 50,000 a year you would have to get to to be in what's called the exempt classification.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
And exempt means that you are exempt from overtime laws and the Fair Labor Standards Act laws for pay. And right now it's absurdly low. You can be essentially almost starvation wages and still be considered an exempt employee who not getting the protections of the
wow.
Fair Labor Standards Act.
That's madness.
Obama has done a great thing by proposing to double it, but people have to talk, bang on your state senator, your U.S. senators and your U.S. representatives to force that through, because if Congress, if the Republican-dominated Congress, which is very responsive to the employer lobby, they call up that rule, and it's kind of like a congressional veto, they can, when administrative agencies like the U.S. Labor Department make a rule, Congress has reserved the right to call it up and essentially veto it. And Obama would have to undo that veto to have the rule go into effect.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is if he doesn't act until the very end of his term, then they will bottle it up and then wait until he's gone.
Right.
And he won't have time to undo it. So what we have to do is force this onto the congressional agenda in an election year.
Ah, yes.
And that really has to happen before, like, September. Because if it happens after September, we could be at risk of having that rule reversed and not be able to invert it.
Right.
Well, I'll have to make that call, or that email probably, rather.
Yep.
Yeah, in fact, if you would put out the notice, I'll send you some information on that, and if you would spread that out...
And I'd love
keep
to.
Banging on that so that people know this is a huge improvement.
Yeah. I mean, that would be like night and day, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, John, thank you very much for coming on the show. Did you want to give us the information one more time for the nonprofit that people can contact if they think they're experiencing wage theft?
Yeah, if you have any questions, want to get involved in the fight against wage theft, or if you're concerned that you might be a victim, then contact the Northwest Workers Justice Project, NWJP, and they're at 503-525-8454 or nwjp.org.
Awesome. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yep.
Thank you. Good show. Take care.
Thank you.
You as well. So along those lines, Mike, I want to talk about Seattle and what they're doing up there. And I'm reading here in labor notes that they've actually enacted law now in Seattle so that Uber drivers, Lyft drivers, the share economy, they can organize. They can collectively bargain. Previously, a group of employees would have to appeal to the National Labor Relations Board. And ultimately, the employer would say, well, they're not employees, so they don't have this right. In Seattle, that's not an excuse anymore.
It's about time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, especially considering that, I mean, it seems like more and more companies are starting up and doing that, classifying their employees as contractors.
Sure.
And, I mean, yeah, as John was just saying, I mean, that's definitely on the rise now. So setting the precedent that, no, you know, even if you can classify them whatever you want, if they work for you, they are entitled to, you know, to act in this way. I mean, that's...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Otherwise, it's a race to the bottom, right?
Correct.
Like, okay, well, I'll do that work for $10. Oh, I'll do that work for $8, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just going to keep going down and down. Pretty soon, nobody's going to be able to feed themselves or their families.
And we've been racing to the bottom, it seems like, for the last... I mean, really, since about 2008 anyway, so it's,
that's what
it's
it
about
feels
time
like.
To turn it around, and Seattle seems like the right place to have done that.
Yeah, I think so, too. Hopefully, they'll do something. If you're listening, Oregon politicians, let's get something like this here. That
yes.
would just be... incredible.
Especially because it seems like Uber and Lyft and those companies are here to stay in Portland and probably some other cities in Oregon. So it's about time we start really thinking about this hard.
So talking about the decline and the way things have been going since 2008, and actually further back than that,
yeah,
even.
Absolutely.
This term, establishment politics, you've heard this one, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about that? Because it resonates with me.
When I think about that, one image comes to mind, and that's the face of Hillary Clinton.
That's pretty much what comes to my mind, too.
Yep.
I mean, really, the people that are just in it, that have been doing this and accepting money from Wall Street.
Yeah.
And you know, not just the banks, but the pharmaceutical industry.
All the major lobby groups. I mean, yeah, pharmaceutical, you got it, agriculture, you know, all the major industries.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely, I think that this election cycle that we're experiencing right now, as much as it's kind of a distraction from the real issues, it's also... It's a really interesting sort of moment that we're having right now, where there's a real pushback on both sides, on the right and the left, against the establishment politics. I mean, the fact that we have a Bush and a Clinton running for president, and I mean, granted, yeah, Clinton is certainly doing better than the Bush is, but the fact that they are getting attacked from the fringe, from the anti-establishment candidates, is pretty exciting.
It's very exciting.
Yeah,
you know, and then. During one of the debates, Hillary Clinton says, "Why, I challenge you to think of one time where I've changed my vote because of, or I was influenced by Wall Street money." You know, but what do they think, that we're dumb?
Yeah, do you think we don't have the internet? I mean, what is the thought process there?
There's no coincidence that we pay the highest pharmaceutical prices. Mm-hmm. We have the highest drug prices of any country on earth, and there's a reason for that. Because they've purchased the politicians.
Yeah, and I mean, hearing Hillary, you know, combat the accusations by saying, well, just because they give me money doesn't mean that I then owe them something. I mean, I'm fairly certain that's what the role of money is.
Yeah.
If someone gives you money, they expect something in return. There's
very
rarely an instance in this country, at least, where someone gives you money and expects nothing back. That's called charity. And
yeah, that's
true. Not what politics is.
Yeah, that's not what Wall Street is either.
No,
I'm telling you, they've never opened up their checkbook for me.
No, I haven't received anything from them, that's for sure.
No, if anything, it seems to be flowing the other way.
Amen.
But, you know, things are changing. I mean, we got a real shot here at an anti-establishment politician winning
Absolutely.
The highest office in the land. I mean, what does that mean? I mean,
it's exciting. I mean, you know, certainly there's a long, long slog ahead of us. But I mean, just based on the polling data and the primaries that have already passed, I mean, it seems like there is a real challenge being mounted, not only from, you know, the far right fringe, someone like, you know, Donald Trump or something like that.
Right.
But, I mean, more excitingly and more to the point, Bernie Sanders. I mean, that the fact that he, in every demographic, every age demographic below, I think, like 65.
That's what
I
read.
He is polling astronomically higher than Hillary is.
That's right.
I mean, that's obviously the one demographic Hillary is holding down is the one that votes the most. But still, it's really exciting.
But it doesn't have to be that case.
No, it does not.
It seems like there's been a high mobilization again. I mean, not as much as when Obama ran in 2008. That was just
Bernie's receiving more donations.
Momentum. He is.
Yeah.
He's got more donations. More people are getting to know him.
Yeah.
And the more people get to know him, the more they realize that he's not gonna lay down and accept the system anymore. Like, everybody feels defeated, right? What can you do? I have one choice for internet. I have Comcast.
Yeah.
And you know what? I actually have two choices now. CenturyLink, if you consider that an option.
Which is barely an option.
Which is barely an option.
Sure.
Where I'm at, they have such slow speeds.
Yep.
So basically, I'm stuck with Comcast for internet, right? Now, Comcast has introduced data caps. So they're losing money because nobody's paying them for cable TV anymore. Everybody's got Netflix. So what do? They're like, oh, we're just going to charge you if you use Netflix by putting these data caps on. So I'm looking into it and I'm thinking, well, I hate Comcast. CenturyLink's a little bit slower, but I'm going to switch over. CenturyLink just announced they're going to introduce data caps.
And that effectively takes away the one tool that the consumer has to be like, hey, I'm threatening to go to this other company.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's no better service there, then there's not much of a threat, you know?
Yeah, they don't care. There's no customer service. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, it's completely shocking to me that, like, I mean, a campaign being run by Bernie Sanders where he's simply sort of stating the truth. He's pointing out the reality as it is and not as we wish it to be.
Yes.
Is so controversial. And people can say, well, you know, sure, you young kids can be idealistic, but like we need to have someone who's a realist. And it's like, no, this guy is speaking more reality than anyone else running for president right
now. It's sad when a person that cares about American people gets labeled as an extremist.
Yep. It is. And the fact that like they are really throwing that term socialist out there as if we aren't able to look that up, as if we aren't able to really look past that term and see what it is that he's actually advocating for, as if that's just going to put our blinders up and we're all just going to forget about him entirely.
This isn't the 60s all over again or whatever it was when they were profiling anybody that had anything to do with socialism.
And if you look at people polling from people under the age of 35, our age demographic views the term capitalism more negatively than we do view the term socialism. So frankly, it's not a great defense.
Absolutely. And you know, I think that's one of the big things is the internet itself and social media. Obviously the rich interests control the media, so they get to tell you what you hear. They get to tell you what information you get to have, but that's gone. And I think that's why now is the time that we have fringe politicians coming in, and they're enormously popular.
If you look at someone like Bernie Sanders, he's been completely ignored up until the last month or two. He's been 100% ignored by the mainstream media, and all of his success is due to, I mean, in a large part of the internet, but like social media has been pretty much his exclusive platform. And I mean, he has run a campaign that's actually done a great job of connecting with young people through the media that we consume.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's the fastest half hour of my day. I don't know about you. I just have a couple blurbs I want to read here out of the labor notes. If you're interested in going, the labor notes troublemaker school is in Chicago, April 1st through 3rd. Today is the last day to register and get a big discount. It's $45 off, making it $105.
That's a great deal.
Yeah, it is. I'm going, by the way.
All right.
Also in here, a federal judge has ordered the Pennsylvania printing company American Future Systems, Inc. to pay back $1.75 million in back pay and damages to 6,000 employees that were forced to clock out when they used the bathroom.
Wow. Well, that's an exciting ruling right there.
That is. Well, actually, I'd love to read a bunch more of these. If you don't have labor notes, check it out. There's a lot of good information in there. But it's now 6:31, and I'm sure the folks